Hey everybody, Barry Friedman back, Showbiz Blueprint. We're doing this series of interviews on the show of show business after, nine so years of talking about the business side of show business. We put this program together for alumni to look at the show thing. First thing I asked you when we started this is make sure you have a show that's sellable. And then in 2018, I thought, you know what, we should probably start talking about the show business a little bit. So collected amazing interviews, hope you're enjoying them. And today, I'm telling you, today is insane. I'm reaching so far back into my network for this, for Ken. We first met in 1986 in Los Angeles. We were in a show at the Variety Arts Theater called Hats Off, the show that eventually led to The Tonight Show, which led to corporate, which led to opening acts. And, you know, it was a great life for so many of us. And I can't wait for some of the stories. Ken is a professor at University of San Francisco. He's an award-winning director, actor. I've seen him live in plays. I've seen him. I'm going to show some pictures later on because it so illustrates what he's going to talk about. But Ken, I'm sure none of you know him. He is a gem. He is the diamond that none of us have ever gotten to hold and touch. So, hey, man, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. I got to tell you one of my favorite stories about the Variety Arts show we did.
Uh-oh.
So after that, I got hired at the LA Playboy Club doing my magic act. And when the Larson brothers said, we're going to extend the show and bring in Harry Anderson.
Right.
I was already contracted to start performing seven nights a week at the LA Playboy Club in Century City. So they changed the order around for the show that we did. And they made me first.
I remember.
I would run off stage after balancing like a 60-foot ladder on my chin, run out the back of the audience, and Shalane would be there. She'd have my bag and my car keys. I'd get in the car, zip up to Century City, and then do two shows at the LA Playboy Club doing this seven nights a week.
And
that was a blast. And that's when we met, man.
I know. I so remember it. And I remember we both got invited. Both our acts got invited to perform at the Magic Castle. Maybe that was your first time. Maybe you've been there more.
No. We auditioned the same night.
That was wow.
I know.
And I remember standing in the wing watching you going, you are so real. And I'm so full of shit. I mean, you know, 1986, Dan and I were, you know, we were minutes off the Renaissance Fair stage. And I was watching you, you know, actually care about every single moment on stage. And I learned so much from you. So, hey, do a quick recap of, you know, maybe performing history. I know you've won San Francisco way back in the day, Street Performer of the Year. I mean, just a quick thing to kind of set some context from where you're coming from. And I don't even know if I mentioned it, but Ken is going to talk to us today about character and bringing it to stage.
So I guess my journey started, I'm from the east side of Cleveland in Ohio, and I got into magic at a young age, a lot of magicians, as I was also doing theater. It was just another way to meet girls. So I started performing, and I basically put myself through school doing magic on the side. And in the Midwest, I was touring around doing comedy clubs and nightclubs and college campuses while I was still an undergraduate. And so I had already had that nightclub act for 3-4 years. And then when I came out here to San Francisco to go to the American Conservatory Theater for grad school, I was broke and I was, you know, going down to Pier 39 and performing down there and passing the hat and living on a lot of top ramen. And the thing for me is a lot of the street performers that I met and I started getting involved with, friends with, they were working on their act. I was kind of weird because I already had this nightclub act that I'd been doing for 3 or 4 years. And a lot of it was, it's a lot of audience participation and music and magic and mime and juggling and gymnastics and dance. And then
this guy.
Back when we both had hair.
Right. But this was kind of the act you were doing when I first met you. Was this similar to the street performing?
Exactly. And and that was the shot, that one with the dice, that was at the Magic Castle.
From the castle.
So, you know, I mean, I was the whole time this journey of working on developing myself as an actor and getting more classical training at ACT in San Francisco. And I was also on the side, not only making money, but developing this comedy, magic, and mime act. So, yeah. And then, street performer. I won the number one street performer in San Francisco. And after that, the city, the following year, they chose 3 performers to represent the city for Queen Elizabeth's visit. And
damn.
So I got to perform for the Queen of England.
Wow.
I know. And then, you know, after that, like, you know, then the corporate gigs and the big concerts and... Yeah. TV.
And the '80s, and it was wonderful. The '80s, '90s, and it was a good time.
And I was one of those weird ones that I was also headlining comedy clubs. I remember Bob Fisher at the Ice House saying, would you like to headline? Because I had been middling for everybody. And again, for those people who don't know, my act was silent. I didn't speak at all.
Totally.
It was all to music. So I remember him coming to me and saying, Dana Carvey, I was opening for him. And he goes, look, Dana doesn't want to follow you. Is there any chance that you would like to add 10, 15 more minutes and we'll start headlining you? And I was like, okay. And then I started doing comedy clubs as well. And again, all the time working on my career as an actor
in
regional theater.
That was the big thing. Yeah. Wow. That's why I was just going to show a couple pictures here of, you know, how you were able to do so much without talking. I mean, it was one thing to go into a comedy club as a prop act. You already got the shit beat out of you. But then to go in, prop act, not talking, it's like, yeah, comedians be climbing up your stuff.
Well, you know, I remember once Gary Shandling, I used to open for him, and he said, one of the reasons that I love you as an opening act was they're going to laugh their asses off for a half an hour before I get out there, and then the spoken word is that much more poignant. Because my stuff, like you said, I was, you know, prop comic and physical and music and all that high energy stuff. And then the verbal was going to be even more potent for him. So, yeah.
Good stuff.
I've been very, very lucky.
Yeah, man. And very skilled. And you kept working on it. So where in this going to school and making money on the side in the summers and touring and, you know, between learning to be an actor. And it's funny, you know, I'm probably answering my own question, but where did you learn that character actually mattered? Because I remember seeing you at the Magic Castle. I, you know, watched from the wings and I was like, shit, every single thing this guy does matters. It all moves the story along. And I don't see that in a lot of acts.
Well, it's funny. I mean, you know, I watch every so often, I'll watch Penn and Teller's Fool Us. And I'm not watching it really for the magic, although, of course, I'm always interested in who's doing some cool stuff. But I'm always attracted to character. I guess for me, in my early 20s, I don't have to tell you, but I started losing my hair. And my mentors at ACT said, you're going to be a character actor. You already are.
Wow.
And I found that was a lot more rewarding to work on those kinds of roles. They were a lot juicier, a lot more complex. And I played the romantic lead a few times, you know, in my career, and I've gotten to kiss the girl and the boy a few times. But honestly, it was those character roles that I was always drawn to. They were either more funny or more twisted or more something. And so I guess the detail for that and that you could bring more than just, okay, I'm playing Romeo. Nothing against actors who play Romeo.
Sure.
I just found that more exciting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's from, there's me and David Diggs. That's 6 Degrees of Separation, a wonderful John Guare play.
Yeah.
We did this at SF Playhouse, and it was such an amazing thing. I played 4 different roles in that show, and I guess I always liked the idea of being a chameleon and being able to change it up.
Yeah. Man, amazing. You know, I've seen you in a lot of plays over the years, but 2 I remember so clearly. I like remember where I was sitting in the theater. It was the first time I saw you do Cabaret, Joel Greatbart, and I thought, fuck, who in the world has the balls to attack this? And so beautifully. And then there was a play, I forget what it's called, but Gabe Kaplan was in it, and you guys were like, were you directing that play, or were you were in it? Gabe Kaplan, it was playing poker.
Oh my God.
And you guys were sitting around a table, and why? I'll know the title the second we say it. I may be killing this here.
I'm blanking.
Were you in a show with Gabe Kaplan? You were. It was in San. It was in the north. It was in San Francisco,
oh,
right?
Yeah, no, it was up north. It was in Sonoma, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't think of the name of it.
Oh my gosh, how funny! Well, I'll post it.
The Cabaret, you know, is one of my all-time favorite roles. I played that role twice, and I gotta say, you know, being from Cleveland, Joel Grey was from Cleveland, right? In fact,
I didn't know that.
My mom grew up with him, and they were friends. And so when I was coming up in the 60s and 70s, and I was starting to do more theater, I was reviewed as the next Joel Grey. And so the first time, because I started in musical theater, the first time I got to play it was out here in San Francisco. Well, my folks couldn't make the trip.
Oh.
I was so sad. And then 8 years later, artistic director of a wonderful theater in Pennsylvania said, I'm going to do it. You got to play the MC. I said, great. But one of my favorite moments on stage, I think, in my career was at the curtain call for that, because my parents got to see it. And I remember blowing my mom and dad a kiss as I took a bow, and they got to finally see me do that role. So, yeah.
Wow. Incredible.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, it's funny that one of the other big impacts you had on me in your acting was, neither of us can remember the title, but I just have the scene. I was there with my in-laws, who were very newly my in-laws. It was probably back in late 80s, early 90s.
We're talking about American Buffalo.
Yes, American Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
That is the title.
Man.
Dude, you got – that scene was so intense.
Well, Gabe Kaplan wasn't in that.
Okay.
I think you're talking about something else where we were on the same bill together.
Okay.
American Buffalo is an amazing David
Mann. American Buffalo. Yeah. Oh, you acting in that, it stole me, yeah.
It was wild. One of the other things I'll say about character, it's one of my all-time favorite roles I've played. I've done that twice as well. When I first got cast in that the second time, I was actually playing the Cat in the Hat in Seussical, the musical. So here am I singing and dancing my butt off, doing all this silly shtick. And then during the day, I'm rehearsing this intense, dark, suspenseful triangle of these petty thieves.
Yeah.
And one of the most powerful and potent, insecure, really plagued with demons, this character. And I remember being so proud of myself as an actor, because at nighttime I'm still performing Seussical and doing all this light, fluffy, silly shit. And then during the day rehearsing this. And as soon as the show closed, we opened American Buffalo. And I guess the reason I like that time in my career as an actor is because it parallels kind of for me being able to do a little bit of everything, you know? The range. And sometimes, and I'll just bring this to character for a second.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think variety acts particularly, they're only going to do one thing. And that their definition of character is only this big.
Mm.
Now, I think that's a great place to start from. But I think that the more and more variety acts I see, and you've probably seen this too, is that when you see them start to expand and take risks, and give themselves permission to explore character, that's when it really gets exciting.
My gosh. We got to watch a great guy do that, Johnny Fox. I remember knowing him from the Renaissance festivals. We called him to be join us on Hats Off. And looking at him over the years and decades of his career, how he opened it up into, really meaning something. But boy, that's great. Where do you see people, I don't want to talk about easy. It's not easy. But where do you see opportunities for Variety X to do what you just talked about?
Well, actually, I think it's everywhere.
Sorry.
I don't care if you're starting out and you're doing birthday parties or you're doing, church basements. It doesn't matter. Character, there's two things I want to say. First of all, for character, it's really about, people think that that acting is about putting a mask on. And somebody smarter than me once said, actually, acting is about taking a mask off and revealing something about who you are as a person. And so the vulnerability that I think that most variety acts are afraid to share of themselves stops that creative process of developing an extreme character or a fun character. One of my heroes when I was first starting out was George Carl. That character that he portrayed was sort of this, short, little, nervous, and it was constantly screwing up, and he was constantly making mistakes and having to solve problems on the run and rapid fire. And that rhythm, that pace resonated a lot with me. When I was coming up with my character for my comedy Magic Act, it was a combination of George Carl and Harpo Marx.
Totally, I see it.
In that Harpo was like a six-year-old kid, was always willing to go fuck around.
Always, yep.
He loved the pretty girls, but he would be distracted in a second. I mean, I don't know if I have ADD or something, but, he was always like that. And yet he also could have these moments of peace and quiet and silence. And so when I think about developing character and for variety acts, you can start anytime you want. Most of the time, it's not having the balls to take a chance.
Love it. Yeah.
We as variety acts, we want to be clever. We want to be cool. And I think it was Philip Seymour Hoffman that said that the only real currency we are able to share with each other is when we're being uncool. And so those variety acts that I'm attracted to are the ones that are risky. You and Dan,
yep.
The reason you guys clicked for so many years,
yeah.
Because I always think of you guys as like 9-year-old boys, like, hey, I can do something. And oh, I can do something too. And Dan was like this 9-year-old game show host, yep. Right? And he had the voice and he would do that. And obviously he had the juggling skills and the comedy skills.
Right. But
the character was there. You were kind of the normal 9-year-old guy or boy. And you had this cool shit that you could do.
Mm.
And you were humble about it always. And that character came through to an audience. And it still does.
Wow.
So I think it's having the balls to take a chance instead of just trying to be clever. That's one thing.
Gosh, I love that, Ken. Yeah. So what I'm hearing in my voice, and I've known our community here for so long, I can actually sometimes channel people and talk to this. I'm just myself on stage. I walk on stage and I'm doing, you know, singing, or I'm doing ventriloquists. Ventriloquists is a wide open field. You should be playing with that every time you take a breath. Right. But you know, I'm a magician. I'm a comedian. Where does it fit into the guy who says that? I'm just myself on stage.
That's fine. I think that works. I also will say that, you know, I teach this in my acting classes. Some people have a real affinity for developing characters and some people don't.
Yeah.
Like, when Harry Anderson, you know, God bless him, rest his soul.
I know.
That Harry was always Harry. He was always himself.
Totally.
He even said, I'm not an actor. I'm just being myself. So Harry the Hat, whether he was on Cheers, whether he was doing nightclubs, whether it was TV or film, he was always himself. He was always the same. And it worked.
Yeah.
There are certain variety acts out there that I see that go, wait a minute, you're not challenging yourself to go further. And I want to talk for a second about where that inspiration can come from.
Oh my gosh, please.
Well, I've coached a lot of variety acts over the years. And to me, that inspiration can come from a lot of different places. First of all, I look at animal imagery for developing a character. Like, go to the zoo, study some animals, see how they move, see what kind of sounds they make. Can you incorporate that into your character? Does it inform your costume? Does it inform the way you do a particular trick? In other words, all right, so I start off, I do the linking rings, and then it gets caught on the microphone stand, and then I do a version of Mike Caveney's with the coat hanger and linking, all that stuff. Traditional tricks been done for a gazillion years.
Yep.
But the character that I'm playing is a 6-year-old little nervous boy, and he only wants to please. And so when things start to screw up, then I get really scared.
Yeah.
I get nervous, which propels more of the comedy, but also allows the character to develop even further.
Oh, so
you mentioned American Buffalo before, and when I played that role, I went to the zoo, and I started studying ferrets. Because those little nervous weasels, they had a very quick tempo in the way they behaved. Now, I played Henry Kissinger in a wonderful play called Nixon's Nixon. Complete opposite. Very slow, and he would talk down here, and his center of gravity was much lower. And he, you know, I remember hearing somebody describe the way Kissinger speaks as like listening to flies fuck.
Oh, my gosh. Because yeah.
So very boring and drab and like this. I would study walruses and how they moved, and they were very heavy and they're slow in their movement. So for me, I get a lot of inspiration in developing characters from animal imagery, but there's lots of ways that people can. And I think, again, it's the willingness for a variety act to not just rely on being clever. It's to say, how can I master these skills, which you got to do,
right?
But then how can I explore something of my own personality that maybe isn't just me being trying to be cool.
So that, yeah, and this is a really big piece of it. What is the so that on the other side of that? You know, explore this stuff. Does the audience, do you get something more as the performer? Do they get something more? Is the whole thing?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know the difference. You know the difference when you see a great character and you're attracted to it, as opposed to every magician who's sitting there in a tuxedo and doing doves and cards and coins. And it's like, okay, we've seen that a million times. And they're usually their hair is slicked back and they're kind of slick and cool.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Again, I don't take anything away from that. But one of my favorite magicians of all time was Johnny Thompson.
Mm, of course.
And the great Tom Sony, he came up with an act, he and his wife, they satirized that, right? Back in the day when you didn't have to be politically correct and he was being right. a magician.
Best, yeah.
Everything was fucked up and the dove would take a shit on his tux and his tuxedo had the little price tag hanging off the sleeve and at the end he would produce out of the cascading skilks a bowling ball. And that had never been seen before because that trick was usually, and he would finish his act by saying, what did you expect, a rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm making fun of, but the character was so thorough in terms of detailed of how to, again, he was making fun of the traditional magician with a tux on.
Beautiful. Yeah. Wow, so good. So, and you've seen some acts that do this halfway. Your challenge and what I hear you saying is take the risk, you know, find some place to do it. Let me share something with you guys and talk about any of these if you want, but I'm just going to show them kind of quickly. You know, what I love, I just kind of came to Ken's website. When you know someone 30 years, don't spend a ton of time on their website, but yesterday I just kind of came to learn. And what I realized is any single frame from your show, something more is happening than the trick. There's a subtext. You're looking at it, I can tell who it is who's doing it. You know, maybe what's coming next, maybe what led into it, maybe something that's just something. I mean, look at this. Look at this moment. That's really, really interesting. And what the separation is.
Look, there's a lot of magicians out there who are far better than me.
Of course. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'm very thankful for the skills that I have in terms of magic. But honestly, if I take any credit, it's for the energy and for the character that I've been able to have all these years in, I guess, trying to share with an audience what makes me laugh.
Yeah.
You know, I never do something in my show that doesn't make me giggle. Also, I'll say I get a lot of inspiration from music. And I know you've had people on to talk about the importance of sound and music in creating a variety act. But I'll hear a song on the radio. I remember when I was laid up, I had my knee rebuilt. And after performing at Bally's in Vegas, I tore my ACL jumping off the stage at Bally's.
Yeah. A great moment in your act, yeah, until it isn't.
Yeah, and I was laid up for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And I heard this song come on the radio, UB40, Red, Red Wine.
Oh.
And I was like, that gives me an idea.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I started coming up with the whole multiply or the color-changing CD trick.
Oh, my God, so good.
Yellow Submarine, Green Eyed Lady, and how I could do that. In fact, it was based on a standard old trick. I remember buying it, you know, for like $12 growing up in Cleveland with the old 45 records, color changing records.
That's right.
It came up with a different method of doing it with CDs. A couple of years ago, I updated it. Now I'm doing with iPhones. That all started because I heard a song.
Yeah.
That felt like it fit in my show. And I really like the song.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you already covered something I wanted to ask you about, you know, came up, but is there anything else you can add to this? You know, what's a step someone can take who's never done anything of what you're talking about? They're listening to it and they go, it kind of makes sense, but you have any idea? I mean, from being a university professor and working with acts and direct, I mean, we didn't even touch on your directing, but I mean, I didn't even know. I asked Ken before we started this, are you still doing any acting? And he goes, I had the, play the father in Billy Elliot, West Coast premiere of Billy Elliot last year in San Francisco. And it's like, damn, he is playing so big, but I've just known you really more for the last decade as, you know, high-end director. So what do you tell somebody when they're, you know, on the verge, not ready to take that risk yet?
There's two things that I would say. I say this to my acting students all the time. I don't think I'm any different than them. I still have my own insecurities. I still have my own thing. I'm still trying to figure this shit out every day as an artist. Mm. The only thing that I have that they don't have is that I've been doing it longer and maybe I've got more confidence doing it. So the two things that I would suggest anybody interested in developing character for the purposes of blossoming their variety act would be, one, take an acting class.
Mm.
A class that's specifically geared towards character development. I'll bet wherever you are watching this, in your town, there's somebody teaching an acting class. And if you know that specifically you want to get towards character development, you'll find that. Second thing is, there's some magnificent books to read. Yeah. I mean, the father of method acting, Stanislavski, his second book he wrote was called Developing a Character, Creating a Character. And go ahead, read that. There's some wonderful other acting books out there as well that talk about how to, as an actor, create a character. I also think that sometimes variety acts shy away from this stuff because they're intimidated by it. Oh, yeah. Well, I've been teased plenty of times over the years that, oh, Ken's an actor. He's a...
Of course.
No, fuck you. If our goal is to really entertain, if that's what we're really trying to do as an artist, be it at a rent fair or being it on the Tonight Show or being it in those corporate gigs, if you're trying to entertain as a variety act, then you owe it to yourself to try and find those secret parts of your personality that you can bring out and allow a character come out. And I think it's just having the tools. You can get them in a book, you can get them by taking a class, and I'm sure there's some online classes you can take, but that's not the same thing as actually being in the room and working with somebody that will help you develop a character. By the way, there are a lot of conservatory and master's programs around the country, like Blue Lake. They have wonderful physical theater training, and you'll spend a whole year in how to approach creating a character. It might be from a physical standpoint, it might be from a vocal, it might be psychological, it might be using something called Laban technique, which I teach. It could be something called Delsart. So there's lots of different methodologies and techniques in order to develop a character. Take a class, read a book, take a step and see what happens, because otherwise you just get in line and you're just another variety act like everybody else. And I go, that's great. Didn't work for me. I wasn't good enough. I needed character.
Whoa, what a turnaround. Yeah.
I needed character to have more fun.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally amazing. All right. Well, you do a great piece of character here. Man, you handle cigarettes so well. Like if your character on stage ever has to, you got that cut. Here it goes. Oh my God.
I'm just pushing it up with my thumb.
We had to throw that in for this.
Hey, oh, look. Oh, he still got it.
Remember Johnny did that great thing with the little torn up? Oh God, I so miss that. Yeah, what a miracle. Hey, so let me end this with this question. You know, you're flying somewhere, your props get lost, whatever, you're in a bad mood. What's one prop or attitude or attribute you would never ever in your life dream of walking on stage without?
I think that's a good one. It's my red bandana.
Really?
Yeah. I stole this from Springsteen from the...
that's the best.
From the Born in the USA album, right?
No.
And it was him with... He was facing backwards like this, standing...
Right! Up. Yes!
And he's got a red bandana sticking out of his back pocket. So when I was starting my nightclub act, I was like, oh, that's cool. But I found that is a utility prop has gotten me out of so many jams. I'd have a prop or a routine that I would fuck up, and I could pull that out and improvise with just a red handkerchief, red bandana, and I would make things out of it, or I don't know, I would use it as a scarf and change character, or I would become an old lady, or I don't know, it didn't matter. And I found that was the one thing. In fact, I always had a spare that I never checked with my magic stuff.
Oh, my God. Place. I just found this just while we're chatting.
Yeah, there it is.
it's never too far away.
No, it isn't. I got to say.
Dude, that is the best answer to that. I love that, the red band.
Because again, I think the simplicity of that, and it goes to what we're talking about, is that I could use that one simple utilitarian prop to change character if I needed to help me have more fun and be creative, especially if I had a volunteer on the stage. As opposed to having the linking rings or a zombie ball
or
a magic thing. Because in the end, I guess when we watch variety acts, we're obviously mesmerized by the skill. But if we're really attracted to that performer, it's because of something of their heart, something of their humor, something of their intellect that we're drawn to. And I'll take that any day.
Wow, this is the best. Hey, so we talked about, you mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman, talked about Gary Shandling, two great men who have passed on as performers. Let's just touch, I mean, ending this thing. Robin Williams, who we got to tour with for 6 years, always had in his rider just a box of random shit. And that was his encore every night. It's your red scarf. I mean, what? How important is, and that's the epitome of how important character is.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'll throw it back at you. I remember seeing you, like, you guys would do stuff and then you would ask for borrowed objects to juggle.
Yeah.
Like, go in the audience and take a woman's shoe or a purse or a this or a that. It's like, how are you going to solve that problem as you bury the character?
Yeah.
And we're drawn to that because,
oh my God, so real.
That's, and when Robin was doing it, it was like, we knew that he didn't know what was in that box.
Nope. Never saw it. Yeah.
But that he was open to whatever the creative muses that were going to come. Sometimes it was hysterical. Sometimes maybe something didn't work as well. But if you trust that creative instinct, and I'll say this, that in terms of character development, what's most important to me is a sense of play. And I teach this in my advanced acting classes, and that is that I believe that acting is really about a childlike desire of make-believe. It's what we all had as children, right? That we knew how to be creative and play. And it's as we get older, we get more fucked up and we start, our insecurities come around, and then all of a sudden we doubt ourselves and then we're not willing to play. And Robin had that. He had it till the day he died. He honestly was always willing to play, to be generous and experiment and see what was going to happen. I will tell you one last little story. I was watching a Sir Kenneth Robinson TED Talk from a couple of years ago.
Love it, yeah.
He's one of my favorites, and he's talking about creativity. And in it, he starts with an anecdote where he says that a kindergarten teacher says to the children in the class, go ahead and take out your crayons and piece of paper and draw something. And she's walking around the room, and she comes up to a little girl, and she leans over her shoulder and says, Sally, what are you drawing? And she says, I'm drawing a picture of God. And the teacher looks down at her and says, oh, Sally, nobody knows what God looks like. And Sally looks up and says, they will in a minute.
Go!
We as kids, we know how to play. We don't have that same kind of bound energy. And so if I could say anything to your variety artists watching this, it's that don't be afraid to take a chance. One other thing I didn't say is I love to people watch. I get great ideas from just sitting, going to a bus stop, going to a mall. Can't go to the airport anymore and watch people. Right. You can a little bit if you're flying, but watch people, study how they move, how they behave, and bring that creative, playful spirit, and you will come up with something that's going to help you bring about a fabulous new character that maybe you never thought of before.
Mm. Dude, thank you so much. What an incredible insight. And
how much am I getting paid for this, by the way?
Zero, which is great. You know, it works out well. Hey man, thank you for everything you bring to this thing. I know other people are paying you, so I'll jump onto that. And
I would pay you to talk to you any day of the week,
Barry. Yeah, we can do that. Thanks so much, man. Thanks for everything you gave here. It's great.
My pleasure. And love to you and your family.
Thanks. All right.